What the Ocean Keeps, by Away Laughing, read by Rhea314. Fandom Mushishi. Rating teen and up audiences, no archive warnings apply. Characters Ginkgo and Adashino. Summary. Written for Yuletide 2013 for Cafe Cliché. People who live next to the ocean know a common truth. Water is the source of life and the end of it. The ocean gives fish, rivers give drinking water, and lakes can be transformed into rice paddies. At the same time, rivers flood, rice paddies can dry up. The most common end, though, is the ocean and her temper. After all, the ocean keeps what she takes. The first case is brought to Adashino's attention just as the snowmelt from the mountain is starting to flood the rivers and streams which threaded through the village and nearby lands. It is a stormy afternoon when frantic knocking on his door roused him from a letter he is trying and failing to compose to one enigmatic Mushishi. Little Kiko-chan is on the other side of the door, her hair plastered to her head by rain and her thin kimono soaked. Kiko-chan is, like most of the village children, a fisherman's child, and rarely bothered him. Now she is flustered and sobbing even as he knelt down to her level. "Kiko-chan," he says, "what are you doing out at this hour? Shouldn't you be helping your mother mend the nets? Why don't you come in and dry off?"
"No, sensei," she says, surprising him by interrupting. "Nae-sama is sick. You need to come now. She can't breathe."
It takes Adashino less than a minute to get his bag and get out the door. Kiko-chan drags him bodily down the hill toward the small hut her family lives in. Her mother greets them at the door, wringing her kimono with obvious worry, tears tracks drying on her face. "Thank you for coming, sensei," she says, leading him to the cot where her eldest daughter is lying. Yui's father sits with her, propping her up so she can cough without choking, and Adashino blinks when after one bout she coughs up clear liquid. Water. "Has Yui-chan been swimming lately?" is his first question, as he goes about his usual business. It's unlikely this is just a case of breathing water, but one can hope. She is running the slightest of fevers and her eyes are unfocused, but the real problem is the wet sound in her lungs. Too much liquid for no reason he can find. She is drowning from the inside. "No," her mother says, "but she's been trying ever since the fever started 2 days ago."
"Did the fever come before the coughing?" he asks,
wincing as Yui spits out another lungful of water, panting for air.
"No, they both started at the same time," she says. "She woke with both 2 days past."
It isn't normal, any of it, but he left after an hour, promising to return with help. A week later, two boys and an older lady are struck with the same ailment, and Yui-chan is missing. That night, Adashino looks down at his half-finished letter and throws it in his fire. Pulling out a new piece of paper, he doesn't stop to think about how to lure Ginkgo back for a few more days. He simply writes a single kanji and sets it out to dry. The letter comes to Ginkgo as he is passing through a moderately sized village. The postmaster finds him as he is preparing to cross the very bridge which brought Ginkgo to them in the first place.
"Ginkgo-san," the elderly man cries, panting as he comes to a halt in front of Ginkgo.
"A letter."
For a brief moment, interest pierces his usual calm apathy, but it wanes rather suddenly when he spots the name on the front. Adashino.
"Thank you," he says to the old man, making to put it in his pack with the other letters and read it later, maybe when he needs something funny to enjoy. The old man stops him with a strange, desperate, flailing kind of gesture.
"The runner from Nibashi says it's urgent," he says.
Ginkgo pauses. Adashino's letters are never important, mostly bribes to come visit that held no interest for him, or empty promises. Ginkgo isn't much interested in promises of any kind. Those are letters he fails to find amusing, but utter strangers have no reason to lie to him. Frowning, he flicks open the letter, raising an eyebrow at the contents. Mushi. Either this man is correct, it is urgent, and Adashino is in some sort of trouble, or the doctor is trying a new kind of trap. Adashino is not, he doesn't think, all that clever, so option one seems more likely.
"Thank you," he says again, after closing the letter and sliding it into his shirt sleeve. The man droops. Does he want money? But nods.
"Glad to be of service," he says,
and with that he leaves Ginkgo to return to his warm house and loving family. Ginkgo casts one last longing glance over the large bridge which spans the huge mountain pass, and turns, not toward the village, but up the thin path which will take him to the coast. Adashina's village is small enough that if it has a name no one cares to remember it, which is why Ginkgo's mind says it's exactly that, Adashina's village. Though he arrives at the time of day most boats are coming in, the village is subdued, only a few workers unloading meager amounts of fish onto the docks. Adashino is there, talking with a haggard-looking man, who perks up when he spots Ginkgo. Ginkgo tries not to cringe. He hates the hopeful looks some give him. They are the ones who are always worst off. What is worse is when Adashino gave him the same look, and all but runs towards him. Right away, Ginkgo knows something is wrong. He is flushed and breathing too hard for the short sprint, and his eyes are glassy. He looks ill, is ill.
"I came as soon as I got the letter," he says by way of greeting,
and Adashino nods, ignoring the man dogging his heels.
"I knew you would," he says. "It's very bad, Ginkgo. It's..."
He is cut off by a slight cough, one which doesn't seem severe enough for the third man to go so completely pale.
"We'll talk inside," Ginkgo says, and Adashino nods.
He has never been this agreeable about anything, except maybe Mushi stories and bandaging a few of Ginkgo's worst wounds. Ginkgo could almost be worried. Ginkgo listens to Adashino's story with the usual outward calm, even though his mind races with possibilities. It seems fairly straightforward, up until Adashino tells him that those who get sick often disappear without a trace during the night.
"Yui-chan disappeared 5 days after I saw her," he says, "and her mother and sister have since fallen ill, and her mother has gone missing, as have young Aiko-kun, Iku-chan, Himeko-san, who runs the bakery, and her husband, Seiichi-san. Even more are sick, but they were the sickest, and the only ones who went missing. All young women and children, except the last one," Ginkgo notes. "That is likely important."
"Are you saying you've lost 6 patients? He says, waiting to see how Adashino reacts. If it is a Mushi, it will be easier to figure out which it is if it changes the people themselves.
"That's not very responsible, Adashino."
He is disappointed when the doctor scowls at him instead of doing something more odd. The effect is ruined further by the other man's overly wet cough.
"And you've gone and caught it, too. Very irresponsible."
Adashino gives him a glare that is wounded enough. Ginkgo is forced to pull out a cigarette to cover a sudden case of nervous regret. Obviously, Adashino is not in the joking mood.
"Actually, maybe I can take that back. I guess you're not so irresponsible," he says after a few puffs. "Now I can just examine you, instead of walking all the way next door."
Adashino is still glaring at him, but he does permit Ginkgo's poking and prodding, and answers his questions without doing more than pouting at him.
"Other than the obvious," Ginkgo says, sitting back down, "are there any other effects you've noticed now that you are sick too?"
"I really want to go swimming," Adashino says after a brief moment. "It's worse at moonrise."
Ginkgo says, lighting up another cigarette. "Does that help?"
Night comes upon the village in the same way it comes upon every village, silent but obvious. All the more obvious is the tension in the village, the fear the villagers have that they will turn around again and find another son or daughter or wife missing. Ginkgo sits himself down on the pier just as night falls. Adashino is sitting nervously next to him. Ginkgo had spent most of dinner going over Adashino's collection of oddities, just to make sure nothing there caused this. Naturally, it's not that easy. As the sun sets and the moon starts to rise, Adashino starts to twitch, small movements which edge him closer to the water. Ginkgo ignores him. He'll stop him before he does any real damage, instead focusing on the sound coming from the water. Voices, almost, or an echo of a voice. Sometimes he thinks he spots faces in the foam decorating the waves.
"I should go," Adashino says rather abruptly, when the moon, a blue moon, is hanging low and the tide is high. "Go where?"
Adashino
falters, and Ginkgo turns to look at him. He's sweating, which is a new development. So much his hair is dripping with water. Ginkgo sniffs.
He smells only seawater, nothing to indicate it's a human making all this water.
Ah, he says, startling Adashino.
Ah, what?
You should go for a swim, Ginkgo tells him. Adashino pins him with a "what are you talking about, you crazy bastard" look. He gets that a lot.
You'll feel better, trust me.
Adashino hesitates, and Ginkgo almost feels a little hurt. They dealt with one another enough. Adashino should trust him. He's interrupted by that thought, by a young boy in the distance. He's walking in a strange, jolting way, and as he gets closer, Adashino gives a yelp and stands.
That's Hirokun, he says. He's been sick 5 days.
7 was the magic number to this illness. Those who were ill a full week disappeared without a trace, or at least some had.
Did anything strange happen before this first showed up? Ginkgo asked Adashino, stopping him from going to the boy.
Adashino shakes his head.
There have been a lot of storms this spring, but other than that, no.
Ginkgo hums, watching as another face is painted in the seafoam.
You really should go for a swim with Hiro, he says, and without waiting for Adashino to argue, chucks his acquaintance off the pier. Hiro dives in the water after him, without so much as sparing Ginkgo a glance. It takes a moment, but Adashino resurfaces, sputtering, and Ginkgo watches as tiny blue mushi slide out from his mouth into the ocean. Hiro has a similar mushi. His is a little larger, though.
What?
Adashino gasps as he hauls himself and Hirokun onto the pier.
I'll explain in the morning, Ginkgo says. First, we should cure the rest of your patients.
Adashino must be back to normal because he looks ready to argue when a very tiny old lady shuffles past them, coughing hard. Like Hirokun, she dives into the water fully clothed. Unlike Hiro, she does not come back up. As she hits the water, she changes, her body melting into the very seafoam and water. Adashino gapes while Hiro screeches in surprise.
So much for explaining in the morning, Ginkgo thinks, as several people react to the scream.
Your mushi problem can be fixed by exposing them to salt water, he tells the crowd rushing toward him, and you'll want to do it quickly.
As people rush to go collect their parents or siblings or children, Adashino drags him a slight way away from the pier.
Is that what happened to Yui-chan?
Yes, Ginkgo says.
It's a mushi called umiminawa, he explains. Seafoam mushi. My best guess is one of your storms caused high waves which stranded them on land. They can't survive out of the ocean for very long, so they latch onto the nearby sources of salt water. They must have washed up very high to go for humans instead of the ocean. They're not good at moving out of water, you see.
It's why none of the fishermen showed signs of illness, though. All that salt spray from the fishing would have coaxed out any mushi they did carry.
Adashino runs a hand through his hair.
That makes sense, but... Can we get the ones who, you know, can we get them back?
Ginkgo shakes his head, watching as the man from earlier slides the last of his family into the water. It's pure luck, he thinks, that she doesn't have to leave him like all her sister and mother did. Judging by the size of her mushi, it was a close thing.
You've lived here for years, Ginkgo says. You know the ocean doesn't give back, it spoils.
Adashino winces, refusing to watch as another person, a little boy, rejoins the sea instead of getting cured.
I'll probably have to leave, Ginkgo says, eyeing the upset mother and angry father of the boy. For a few years, at least.
I might have to join you, Adashino says.
Ginkgo snorts.
Not on your life, he says.
Adashino sputters in outrage and Ginkgo shrugs.
Just blame it on my weird mushishi ways if they try to lynch you, he says.
Very comforting, Adashino mutters before turning on his heel. You can spend the night at my house and flee for the hills in the early morning, he says, speaking over his shoulder. I'll go be a proper doctor. Ginkgo says nothing, just watches him go. His pack is still on his back, and there's nothing at Adashino's house for him. For people like him, houses are more dangerous than foam-making mushi. They represent something that, if he's not careful, he may someday try and get for himself. So he doesn't take Adashino up on his offer, just slips out of town and leaves the people there to their grieving and celebrating. It's what he does. The sun rises on a little village with a name no one can be bothered to remember. The people there are sad, dressed in black to remember those they've lost. but are a little less tense than they've been in weeks. A doctor sits in his study, sipping a cup of tea, and trying to compose a letter he can only assume will never be read. A little girl sits with her father, recalling stories of her beloved mother and sister as they work to fix his fishing nets. A young man opens his parents' bakery for the first time since he lost them, and a pretty young woman comes down from the hills with a basket full of flowers for a baby brother who will never grow. Higher in the hills than that young woman ventured, a strange man with silver hair sits at a campfire. He's smoking a cigarette and leaning against a rock. There's a letter in his hand, an old one which has been opened and closed many times before. Mushi dances in front of him, though he doesn't pay them much mind, instead focusing on the arrangement of words from Adashino. Adashino really is a funny man, Ginkgo thinks as he puts away the letter after coming to the end. The Mushishi is rather happy, privately, that though the ocean took many from that little village, the doctor was not one of them. After all, who would send him such ridiculous letters if the other man turned to seafoam? That thought follows Ginkgo as he stands, shooing a Mushi from his nose, and heading back toward the village where he got the summons. He really, really wants to see what's on the other side of that bridge. Above him, the sun climbs higher in its perch, lighting up lush green and promising a beautiful day for a walk in the mountains. It's one promise Ginkgo can appreciate. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this story's post. Thank you for listening.